Hi, my name is Mandy Jackson Beverly, and I'm a bibliophile. Welcome to the Monday edition of the Bookshop Podcast, where I interview booksellers and independent bookshop owners from around the world. To help the show reach more people, please share with friends and family and on social media. And remember to subscribe and leave a review wherever you listen to this podcast. You're listening to episode 152. This week, the Bookshop Podcast hit another milestone. We are ranked number 35 on the 100 Best Book Podcasts around the world by Feedspot.com. So thank you, Feedspot. We appreciate your acknowledgement. And I must tell you, I love a challenge. So I'm hoping to get up in that top 10 sometime soon. A big thank you to everyone who subscribes to the Bookshop Podcast, has reviewed it, left starred reviews, and keeps listening every week. Thank you. You are appreciated. And I'll make sure to put the feedspot.com link in the show notes. Village Well Books and Coffee is a community-focused and impact-driven bookstore cafe in the heart of downtown Culver City, California. Owner Jennifer Caspar says Village Well Books and Coffee is a third place to go for rest and nourishment between home and work. A place where neighbors have surprise encounters and people who might otherwise be feeling lonely at home can be surrounded by the comfort of lively, friendly human interaction. Hi, Jennifer, and welcome to the show. It's lovely to have you here.
Hi, Mandy. Thank you so much for inviting me to come on.
My pleasure, and I'm excited to chat with you because I happen to love Culver City. So let's begin with your story. What were you doing before opening Village Well Books and Coffee? And what inspired you to become an indie bookshop owner? You have an interesting story and one that I would like our listeners to hear.
Well, I spent most of my career working in community development. I studied urban planning in graduate school. It was something that just really attracted me, the idea of building community and creating a built environment that helps people to connect with each other and, you know, become the best versions of themselves because of the way that they move around in the world. That was just something that I really felt happening to me in my college years and in my 20s. And I was drawn to make that my career. So I studied urban planning. I found my way into community development and specifically affordable housing. And I had jobs doing financing for affordable housing, low-income housing tax credits, and in real estate development, working with nonprofits that would develop affordable housing for people moving out of homelessness and also just low-income people. But I really was drawn to this type of housing called permanent supportive housing for people moving out of homelessness. And it was satisfying work. I really believed in the cause and how it was helping people's lives. But when you're doing finance or when you're doing real estate development, you're really just like behind a computer and with a phone on your ear, and you're just running spreadsheets and writing reports, and you're removed from the community aspects of it. And in the back of my head, I always wanted to have a space of my own. I wanted to get closer to the actual community building. So for a long time, I thought I would create a coffee shop that would have all kinds of programming that we would invite authors in. But because I had not worked in, I studied English as an undergrad, but I never worked in publishing. I never worked in a bookstore. I didn't think that that was a business that I would be able to open. I figured that the knowledge that you needed and the skills you needed were for people who did other things than what I had done. But as my life went on and I got older and braver and I had time to really develop the idea, I decided to add a bookstore to my concept. So the business, Village Well Books and Coffee, is a bookstore cafe. It's two side-by-side businesses. We have 1,500 square feet for each in our space. And they really support each other. So, you know, the cafe area where we have 28 seats is for people who want to just come and connect with each other or sit down and work on their laptop or sit down and read. And then the bookshop is where we sell the books. And, you know, we provide inspiration through all the books we carry. And so I've always loved bookstores. I never, you know, so, you know, long story short, I kind of had the inspiration to create a connection space and would have loved to do a bookstore, but I didn't have the courage to add it to my my idea until like the last 5 years, which was when I was ready to pull the trigger and get started on the business. But it's really, you know, the whole inspiration is about community building. That's what's always driven me.
And thank you for all of the work you've done, helping the homeless find housing, and in general, showing us what building community looks like.
Oh, thank you for saying that.
And you've created a community space where people can work, shop for books, eat and enjoy a refreshment, and gather for events such as author signings. You spoke earlier about your initial idea. Is Village Well Books and Coffee evolving as you envisioned?
It is, in all ways except, you know, being profitable. It's completely working. Every day people are coming. So, you know, it really has been a gratifying experience for me to follow this vision that I had of creating this business and this community space and to see people show up for it. And we opened our doors December 31st, 2020. And, you know, we were right in the middle of the pandemic. In our 3,000 foot space, we could only allow 7 customers in because of the occupancy restrictions during COVID. Everybody was masked, obviously. We couldn't let anybody sit down in any of the seats, or people could browse at their leisure. But other than that, people couldn't really hang out in the stores. And even during that period, people were coming. And on the weekends, people were lining up and waiting their turn to come in the shop. And now that things are more open, we're just busy. You know, people are sitting, they're filling up the seats in our cafe area. And on the weekends, there's just like crowds in the kids section and in the shelves. And people are just really responding to it. And even like on the staffing side, a lot of people are having difficulty finding staff this year. And every day, you know, one or two people will come in with their resumes and say, I just love this space and I would love to work here. So it's really gratifying that it is coming together. And so, you know, and then I mentioned profitability. It's, you know, it's obviously a low margin business. Both cafes and bookstores are low margin businesses. And I have faith that we will be sustainable. Hopefully before the end of the year, we'll break even and be a going concern. And I just, you know, the fact that people keep coming is what gives me that faith that we'll figure out how to manage our expenses and make it a going concern.
Well, the first few years of any business is difficult. There are times when you want to throw it all in and you think, oh my goodness, what am I doing? And then there are the magic moments when something wonderful happens and you know in your soul you are doing exactly what you need to be doing at the time you need to be doing it.
Yes.
As I mentioned earlier, I love Culver City, and it has morphed into a flourishing community, a destination area within the city of Los Angeles. Why did you choose Culver City as the location for Village Well Books and Coffee? And do you have a history within the community?
So I have lived for 25 years in a neighborhood just 2 miles north of Culver City in the city of Los Angeles. And I knew that when I opened a business that I wanted to be close to home. When I did my previous work, my offices were always in downtown LA, and I would be working on projects in South LA, East LA, the Valley, all over the place. And just, you know, Los Angeles is a big region. It takes a while to get around. So I knew that if I opened a business where I was going to want to be there 60, 70 hours a week sometimes, that I had to be close to home so that I could come get a break when I needed to, that I could, you know, keep an eye on my dogs who I'm not bringing to work, leaving at home, so I can pop back and forth to see them and also build off of the community that I've built, raising kids over here, meeting all the people that you meet when you raise kids and building a community. I knew I wanted to be close to home. I looked at the commercial districts near where I live, and Culver City was really the best one. It's designed in a way that the arterial streets are not as wide as others in Los Angeles. There's only 2 lanes going in each direction on Culver Boulevard where we are. And the city's been very conscientious about making the city pedestrian friendly. So I knew I wanted to be here. There's like a vibrant little shopping district that's pleasant to be in. But what I didn't know was how wonderfully connected the people are here. That the like I mentioned before, people are here because they want to engage with the small school district and with the small city government. And it's really just been an incredible place to have an independent bookstore, because people come in every day and they say, we've wanted a bookstore here for so long. And it's also kind of a bookstore desert where we are. If you look at the map of Los Angeles, you see bookstores dotting the coast and the mountains, And where we are kind of in the Central Basin, there really aren't a lot of bookstores. And, you know, the other thing that's happened here in recent years is that the property values and the economy, all the good tech jobs that are here have really increased the ability for people to support a business like this in this neighborhood. So, you know, Culver City a decade ago or 20 years ago was really like a working class area compared to what it is now. And it's very unfortunate for housing and for people trying to get into housing and you know, even as a renter, you know, people who go to college and come back, they have a hard time finding an affordable place they can rent in this part of town, which is unfortunate. But the plus side for this business is that the shopping dollars are there, and it's going to hopefully support us in the coming years.
Yes. And for our listeners from other parts of the world, Los Angeles has been slow in getting our city transit railway system up and going, but it's happening now. And Culver City is one of the stops on our local train system. And this, I'm sure, is one of the reasons for Culver City's popularity. Plus, it has fabulous restaurants, the Kirk Douglas Theater, which I think is kind of close to you, isn't it?
We're right across the street from the Kirk Douglas Theater, which is part of the Center Theater Group, the major theater institution in LA.
It's actually one of my favorite theaters in LA.
Oh, me too. It's so intimate and affordable.
Now, there's one aspect of your store that is intriguing to me, and that is the story behind the mosaic mural. Can you share that with us, please?
Oh, yeah. So the mural was created by a nonprofit organization called Piece by Piece. And I was on the board. I was actually the board chair for a number of years. I was on the board for 10 years and the board chair for most of that. And Piece by Piece at the time was affiliated with Skid Row Housing Trust, which is an organization in Skid Row that creates housing for people moving out of homelessness. And I was on that board for a long time, too. Piece by Piece's mission is to provide free art workshops to people moving out of homelessness. So people learn skills, they learn how to do mosaic, and then they're provided with this amazing studio space and time to create their art. And it's a wonderful complement to housing, to affordable housing. So when you move out of homelessness, the housing is obviously the major piece of making you unhomeless. But then you have the social issues and the reasons why people become homeless in the first place, or, you know, the common denominator is that the social connections have been severed and people can't navigate in the world using their social connections to stay stable. And so when you're coming out of homelessness, you really need to rehabilitate yourself socially for a long time. And so these programs like Piece by Piece, where people have the opportunity to do an activity that's occupational, it's meditative as you do it, and you can be side by side with people and have, you know, little conversations that might feel safer than if you were doing something else, like being in a group therapy where you've got to look people in the eye and talk. So anyway, it's just this wonderful community building place that has just like really brought so many people back to life. And I loved being on their board and seeing the work that they did. And it's run by these incredible artists with so much talent. So I knew that when I created my space that I wanted to commission a big piece of art from Piece by Piece. And what we ended up doing was putting a 20-foot mural, I think it's 3 feet tall, 20 feet long, across the front of our cafe bar. And it's a cityscape of Culver City. So it's very bright and colorful, and it incorporates a lot of Culver City landmarks, including there's a gigantic rainbow that's built inside of the Sony Pictures lot. And you can see it from outside of the lot. And so that rainbow is really an iconic image. It's probably only 10, 15 years old, but it's become an iconic part of the Culver City vision. And of course, the rainbow is from
The Wizard of Oz.
The Wizard of Oz, Somewhere Over the Rainbow. Yes. So that was filmed there at, it wasn't called Sony Pictures at the time.
Yeah, I think it might have been MGM.
Yeah. There are a lot of studios. There's a lot of great studio history in Culver City. So anyway, we've got the rainbow in there. We've got City Hall and just a lot of other Culver City landmarks. And so the people can come in and see their community represented there. And the other thing we did was we started making it right at the beginning of COVID, and kids were home and they didn't have anything to do. So we got the idea to invite them to make contributions to the mosaic. So we sent out through the Culver City School District notice inviting kids to participate. And we got like 300 kids who wanted to create a piece of the mosaic. And so we sent them each home a little sandwich baggie with a piece of mesh and either a flower or a heart outlined on it and some broken tile and some glue with instructions of how they should just arrange the tiles however they wanted on the piece of mesh and sent it back. And then the artist at Piece by Piece ended up incorporating them into the murals. And we got so many more than we could fit in the actual mural that we've created these little clusters of hearts and flowers around the shop using those things that the kids built. And then but it's so cool when the kids come into the store and they find the heart or the flower that they designed. And then, you know, that's just a tangible connection they'll have to our space for as long as we're here. Just so cool.
Yes, absolutely. And you walk the talk, Jennifer. You are all about community. You bring in community, you help the community, and you have this fabulous piece of artwork created by community. Okay, let's talk about books. Was it difficult curating the bookshop and getting it ready for opening day?
It was a lot of work. It wasn't difficult. It kind of like flowed. However, it took months to do. You know, you get lists from the suppliers that you're going to buy the books from of, you know, you say, okay, I want to have 10,000 titles and these are the genres that I want to carry. And, you know, we're a general interest bookstore, so we want to have a lot of different interest categories. So, you know, so then you get your list and you have to pick through them and then they're ranked by, you know, what are the best sellers right now? And then you just have to go through the categories and say, this one's for me, you know, maybe the top 100, depending on the size of the category, you know, the top 10, 20, 30%, you say, okay, I'm definitely going to carry all these books because they're the best sellers. And then you go past that and you have to pick and choose, you know, yes to this one, no to that one. You look at the title of the book. Do I recognize the title? Do I recognize the author? You know, and then you can read a little bit deeper. Does it have people I know reviewed it? Did it have a starred review from Publishers Weekly or Kirkus, the two major book reviewing magazines? It's a lot of instinct and faith, but it was a fun process, but it was very labor intensive. It was part of what the enormous amount of work that went. It was the biggest part, you know, other than building out the space, it was the biggest part of getting the store open, but so fun.
The space looks fantastic. You've done a wonderful job.
Thank you.
Did you design the interior or did you work with an architect?
Well, I worked with an architect. Lewis Schepplein is a husband and wife architecture team. They're based here in West LA. I just love their style, their sense of openness and use of color and clean lines. They have just like a contemporary vibe that uses a lot of mid-century modern concepts. And I've worked with them a couple of times before. I actually did a remodel of my house with them back in 2006. So that was when I first met them. They are involved in community development type projects from a design perspective also. So I've worked with them on a couple of proposals for park redesign work that they were pitching to the county. And so,
well, they did a fabulous job. Jennifer, one part of your story, which we haven't mentioned, is what you went through in the mid-2000s. What advice would you give women grieving from a sudden tragedy and finding difficulty moving forward? And are there books you can recommend for women about grief and books that they can read to their children?
Okay. I don't think I've mentioned it yet, but my husband died in 2010. And that is part of my story because it's what enabled me to stop working full time and just, you know, go to the consulting and part-time work and really build out this dream business. And it also was the source of the capital because I got life insurance when he died. So, it, you know, it was what enabled me to not work full-time and build up my idea and also to fund the construction of the space. So, you know, first of all, women who suffer a loss and my kids were 10 and 13 at the time. It's such an enormous thing to go from being a two-parent family to a one-parent family suddenly without warning and keep your kids on track. The life insurance money helped a tremendous amount. So I'm not in the same situation as people who don't have that. But just in terms of coping with the loss, I would say everyone's different in the way that they process loss. But the common thing is that it's a lot to process and you have to really devote yourself to it for the period of time that it takes to move through the pain and the side feelings to pain, the guilt and the shame and the anger and just the exhaustion. And I went to a grief group, which I think it went on for 2 years. It was a grief group for young widows. And that helped me just so much, just to do the work of like feeling the feelings and expressing them and moving through it. And I went through, you know, I remember a big point where I just said, I feel resigned, you know, like resignation was my major feeling that I came to. And then some point down the road, I got past resignation to acceptance and the ability to just say, this is my life. And so, you know, you ask about books to read. And for me, I read everything. I read so many books that helped me deal with it. And everybody's different in, you know, the kinds of books that they like to read or what helps them process things. So for me, Eckhart Tolle's book, The Power of Now, gave me this like framework for what the spiritual world is and how it, you know, intersects with the material world that we live in now. And it just, I got so much comfort from that book. But I was reading all kinds of spiritual books, you know, just like Christian mystics like Henry Nouwen, or I don't know if he's a mystic, but Thomas Merton. And I read books on reincarnation stories and beyond and backstories. Like for me, like just like grappling with like, what just happened? What is going on? Where is Eric, my husband? Like what, you know, how is he interacting with us now? And let's see, The Year of Magical Thinking, Joan Didion's book, did a lot to validate the feelings of like, just like the way that denial makes you not accept the death. And during that period to just like, you know, forget that the loved one's gone and imagine that they're in the next room and expect them to respond if you reach out. What else? Oh, My Year of Rest and Relaxation was a great book that that came out in the last couple of years about, it's just this fiction book about a millennial woman whose mother died and she just decides she's going to take a year and sleep it away. And she gets a you know, this fictional psychiatrist to prescribe all these crazy tranquilizers with really hilarious names. And that's her reaction to it. So, and then most recent one that I read was Crying in H Mart, you know, this beautiful book written by this woman whose mother died when the daughter was 25 and she'd kind of been a shit to her mom in her teen years and hadn't really reached the stage of her life where she had fully like come around and you know, like connected with her in a sort of, I don't want to say apologetic, but you know, that she made amends to her mother and connected with her as an adult. And she writes this love letter to her mother. It's so much about the Korean culture that her mother had given her and how that's like part of herself. And, but you know, there's so much literature for kids and adults that deal with death. You know, Charlotte's Web is about fear of death. And at the end, you know, Charlotte dies and Wilbur has to go on without her. And Harry Potter's parents have died. And this is about how, you know, he goes on. So I would say my advice is just, you know, read whatever you can get your hands on and lean into how the aspect of the loss has impacted the story. And definitely with kids, you know, talk to kids about death as much as you can, if especially if it's close to them, if they've witnessed it. You know, kids are experiencing the pain of loss. And a lot of times we're afraid to go there with them because we think that, you know, talking to them about their loss is somehow going to make the pain worse. But, you know, for a kid who's lost a parent or lost someone close to them, the pain is there. They're feeling it. And you're talking to them is not going to make it worse. It's only going to help them to process it. So, you know, when you're reading a book and there's with a kid and there's a story about, you know, an animal or a person that's died, explore it with them. You know, how does that character feel? Why do you think they feel that way? You know, does that remind you of anything you've experienced? You know, all the great things you can talk to kids about when you read anything.
What you're saying reminds me about something I read when my own children were younger, and they're 27 and 30 now. And unfortunately, I can't remember where I read this information. But the gist of it was that at the age of 7, children kind of go into this different realm where they realize there is an end to things. That up until now, everything's kind of been what is real in our world as an adult, they think is kind of a fantasy world. And at the age of 7, they have this realization that things end. And this can often correlate with perhaps the death of a pet or a much-loved family member. And this can often be a time when children will start having night terrors, or they suddenly go from sleeping through the night to interrupted sleep. And I was fascinated with this. And it's one of the reasons why I am a true believer and a supporter of having the arts in education. For me, the arts have always been a way of healing, as has reading. So what you were saying about reading these stories to your children, it's a helpful tool in helping children through the grieving process.
So true. So true. And it's interesting that what you said about seven-year-olds, I'd never heard that before, but it makes sense. Seven is when, you know, kids are starting to really get into reading. Kids will learn to read somewhere between 5 and 8 years old. And, you know, how great that they have access to that when they're needing to deal with this new understanding of the world.
Yes, so true. Is there an area of fiction or nonfiction that you feel are your strongest sellers? And also, is there an area of publishing that you would like to see strengthened by publishers?
It's a tough question to answer. We do sell a lot of contemporary fiction and science fiction and fantasy. Those are probably our biggest sellers in fiction, which is, like, you know, so broad. But, you know, it's a general interest bookstore, and we're dealing with all segments of the population. And then biographies also. Adult fiction, mostly contemporary sci-fi fantasy, and then kids books and biographies are the three biggest categories. I think publishers are doing a really great job in, you know, just bringing new voices into the published world. Since I started paying attention to the book world in detail, probably the last 5 years, you've just seen so many books that are about representing voices that hadn't been heard before, you know, just stories about helping us understand racism and how it's not just, or it's not that people are racist, it's that our entire society is racist, and helping us understand it from all the different legal perspectives and real estate perspectives. And, you know, I think that's just been incredibly helpful. And then the same thing with understanding and acceptance of gay and trans people. There's just so much more literature about these voices, you know, both in fiction and in nonfiction, helping us understand, you know, what other people's experiences are. And I think that literature just didn't exist to the same extent. Probably, I don't know, I haven't been in the book industry that long to say, but I'm guessing, you know, 10 years ago, those voices didn't exist. And as a side note, I think that all this that we're hearing about banned books recently, I think, you know, book banning in communities all around the country is kind of a reaction to that. The fact that, you know, it's not just a coincidence that book banning is happening now. You know, society opened up, people in all aspects of society or telling stories that hadn't been told before, things that we thought were too, that needed to be kept under wraps. So I think publishers are doing a great job bringing out these stories. I think overall the marketing dollars probably still go too much to white people and white men in particular and straight white men and all that stuff. But it's just, it's so remarkable that the books that are out there and that are available for us to highlight.
Yes, I found myself reading a lot more books in translation over the last couple of years than I have before, probably because they're more available.
Absolutely.
And is there a book you'd like to see more people reading, Jennifer? And what are you currently reading?
I am currently reading a book that was written by a local author. It's called Like a House on Fire by Lauren McBrayer. And she is a lawyer with three kids who writes just, like, you know, after the kids go to bed at night or before they wake up in the morning. Somehow she writes novels while doing all this other stuff too. But this book is one of what I'm picking up as a trend of these millennial women in their 30s who are kind of, it's not the traditional coming of age period, but they're kind of coming into themselves and learning about themselves. And in this case, the woman, she's, you know, got kids and a husband who seems like a fine husband, and they're living this, you know, a little bit bougie San Francisco life. They're both working and having their social lives. And she takes a job she's an architect, and she takes a job with a firm. And you find out, like, within the very first chapter, you know, she's basically falling in love with the woman who hired her. So that's not a spoiler at all. But it's basically, you know, it's about her just, like, realizing, you know, after being on this track, you know, this very intense and clear and accepted track of being heterosexual, marrying, having kids, having your career, living a great, fun life. Just it wasn't for her, and taking a little longer than we think we should to find out something important like that about ourselves. So that's what I'm reading now.
And is there a book you'd like to see more people reading?
Well, I've read some fantastic books this year that I just keep putting in people's hands. One is Hyperbole and a Half, which is a graphic novel by Ali Brosh. She wrote a more recent one. This was her first book. I haven't read her more recent book, but Hyperbole and a Half is just this beautiful book that she tells in her drawings and with her words about her depression and anxiety and struggle to exist in the world. And it is hilarious and so honestly descriptive of what it's like to feel depressed. The drawings are hilarious. She has a lot about dogs in there. You know, like, I'm a dog lover, and one of my daughters, you know, we have in common that we both like have, you know, some depression, anxiety, and we love dogs. And I got her to read it because I was like, oh my God, you're going to love this book. It just puts into words a way to make you just feel so seen and felt. So anybody who suffers from depression or anxiety, read that book. You will laugh so hard, and it will just make you feel good. And then the other one I'll mention is a kid's book, The Vanderbeekers of 141st Street, which is just this beautiful book about this mixed race family living in Harlem in modern day. And it's a series. So I wish it had been around when my kids were little to read aloud with them, because this family, they've got a bunch of kids, maybe five kids. And the dad is the super at their building. So they live in this nice apartment in a brownstone that they wouldn't be able to afford if he wasn't doing the super work. And one day the landlord tells him he's going to evict them. And the landlord's this grumpy, horrible guy. And he just wants them out. And the book, the initial book in the series, is about the kids kind of banding together to get the landlord to decide to love them. And you learn about why the landlord is so sad, you know, why he is the way he is. But each member of the family has like a different skill and interest. And they are moving around in the city like you can in urban neighborhoods where there's a lot of eyes on the street. You know, kids are just out and walking to their friends' houses. And it's just such a wonderful, like, it paints such a beautiful portrait of family and also the neighborhood community that I love.
And what's the age group of readers that book is directed to?
Oh, that's a middle grade book, like 8 to 12. But I read books aloud to my kids when they were younger than that. I think you could read that to a five-year-old probably, who, you know, someone who, a kid who's willing to sit down for you to read chapters of a book to them at night, you could do that. But, you know, for kids reading on their own, 8 to 12 is probably the sweet spot.
Well, thank you for all the book suggestions. You've given us a treasure trove.
Oh, you're so welcome.
Jennifer, what are the hours of Village Well Books and Coffee, please?
We're open 8 to 5 every day. And then on Thursday, Fridays, and Saturdays, we stay open till 7. And when we have author events, we'll sometimes be open after that. And we may be expanding our hours more.
Jennifer, thank you so much for being a guest on the Bookshop podcast. You are a true gem, and I wish you all the best with the Bookshop.
Thank you so much, Mandy. You are so generous, and I've enjoyed talking to you.
You've been listening to my conversation with Jennifer Casper, owner of Village Well Books and Coffee in Culver City, California. Make sure to follow me on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at Mandy Jackson Beverly, and check out my website at mandyjacksonbeverly.com. And if you'd like to contribute to the coffee fund, go to thebookshoppodcast.brassprout.com, click on the little orange heart in the right-hand corner of the page, and you can donate using PayPal. Your contributions support the production and editing costs of the show. For information regarding sponsoring an episode, email thebookshoppodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you next time. Theme music provided by Brian Beverly.